And here we go. Welcome to episode 111 of the Linux Slugcast. We are an open podcast / slug that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We actually got darn close to it tonight. Every first and third Friday of the month using Mumble. If you'd like to join us, all you need to do is install a Mumble client on your computer or mobile device. Go to linuxslugcast.com to get the server details. Then just join us in the Linux Slugcast room. If you don't want to participate, you can just listen by connecting to the Mumble server in the listening booth room. If you need help configuring your Mumble client, there is a how-to on our site explaining how to configure the desktop client. And right now, for anybody wondering, the streaming is still offline. We're still working on it. Mumble actually works better, I would say. I don't think we have so many people. We're going to overwhelm Dell and server if you want to jump in the listening booth, or better yet, you know, just jump in the regular channel and talk to us. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you would like us to discuss, and you are unable to join us during the live show, you can send us feedback at feedback@linuxslugcast.com. Leave a comment on our Google Plus community, and link is there in the show notes. It's a bunch of long string of numbers I don't want to read out. Or, you know, it's on linuxslugcast.com, of course, as well, the link. Or check us out on IRC on Freenode, #linuxslugcast. Okay, I'm your host for this evening, 5150. And also on the channel, we have Honky Magoo.
Good evening.
We have Joe.
Hello, hello.
We have Netminer.
Hello, friends.
And a special treat, we have Tony Bemis, who you probably will recognize from the Sunday Morning Linux Review.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on again.
Listen every week.
Yeah, thanks for being here, Tony, and I look forward to seeing you at the end of the week.
Yeah, I'm getting excited about Ohio Linux Fest. I actually just finished an interview with the staff. There's four of their staff, and I'm getting excited. We're going to post that as our next show.
Okay. Is there anything you can tell us about it now, or do we have to wait for the show?
No, I mean, we talk a little bit about the history. You know, the President Beth, she was on, and she's been part of it. Really is one of the founders of the fest. And so she's talked about how it all started, and so it's nice getting some history. But then we got in talking a little bit about the you know, OLFI, the institute, that you could take some classes there, and you know, just a couple things. They're doing a Birds of a Feather this year. I think they did that in the past. I can't remember, but it looks like it's going to be pretty good this year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, all the other content, and not to foreshadow too much here, but when we get into some of the topics, there's been some important developments, I think more important than I realized 2 weeks ago, in the Linux development community, and you know, there may be some foreboding hidden in there, but we shall get to that anon. First thing, we've got some feedback over G+, and the first one's actually from me because I didn't want to wait for the show to post the link. If you've been listening to the show, you know about every episode Joe's been asking me about the Mi mini PC that I ordered through GoFundMe, and originally it was supposed to be here by now. And if you don't remember, it's sort of a little wedge shaped computer with a touch screen, and provision for an on-screen keyboard, but you're originally, you know, it's not meant to be a laptop or whatever. You're meant to plug in a keyboard or whatever. But, you know, comes with, it's supposed to come with a neat little carrying case, you know, certainly something you could drop in a pocket of a set of cargo pants or something like that and carry it around. Actually a full Intel computer. It was originally supposed to have a Intel Atom X7.ZX750 processor, and with the stretch goals, they actually went to a faster processor, a Core M3 7Y30, up the RAM to 16 gig. I don't know if that was default or if you had to pay. I maxed everything out pretty much when I bought mine. But the base system was like $150. And it looked like a lot of computer to me for $150. Some people would say perhaps too much. either they weren't going to be able to deliver, or that this was an outright money grab, but they never intended to deliver anything. Didn't really get a direct, I don't think, link from the Me people, but did find an article from a link from Lilly Computing, where they'd said that, okay, the Me people have come out and said we're not going to be able to make it by the end of September. It's going to get pushed till into November or later, and we had trouble with the prototypes coming back because of the hotter processor. It wasn't going to work as we designed it. So we've added active cooling, so it's going to make noise now, and made it a little bigger. It's going to have a 6-inch screen instead of a 5-inch screen, and that's going to be the major difference. Still, you know, plenty small enough to put in your pocket, assuming it ever shows up at all. And you know, I won't even be terribly worried if it comes November and they say, oh yeah, we're going to push another couple months. Comes June, you know, and it still isn't here. I'm going to sort of figure either they ran into insurmountable problems or they never really intended to ship. So we were just discussing before the show, you know, the original Mycroft came out a full year after their projected release date, and I've, you know, eventually got it, so, and did what it says it's supposed to do. I'm not sure it'll ever be as sophisticated as, you know, things that are backed by companies like Amazon or Google, but it is what it is, and it is what they said it was going to be, pretty much. It was just about a year late, so just because these things come out late doesn't necessarily mean they're never going to come. But, you know, it's when you do, this is the chance you take when you participate in a crowdfunding campaign, that you may get something different, you may get something not as complete, or you may never get anything at all for your money.
Yeah, Kickstarters and Indiegogo are basically gambling.
Oh, yeah. I've pretty much had success. The stuff that didn't come was some minor stuff. In fact, one of the cheap things that didn't come, at least once a year, I get an email from, oh yeah, it's still coming, don't worry. Yeah, that miner, you talked about, you'd looked into the processor it's supposed to be on these. I guess you're looking at that for a computer you're building or something, or just interested in it?
What I wanted to see is what this processor was going to be. Something that that I find to be a bit of a deal breaker is the customer price for the processor from Intel.
Yeah, and I expect that's probably more than the $150 price for this whole computer.
The customer price recommended, according to Intel on the Intel site, is only $281.
Well, of course, you could talk that out, volume pricing or whatever. Yeah, this is kind of what sold me on taking the chance that you're getting a mini Intel computer for a mini ARM computer price. Now, whether they can actually do that or not, that's the gamble.
Well, yeah, again, customer price, I suspect, is if I wanted to go into Fry's or somewhere and order one. When you're talking having it put on somebody's factory manufactured everything all up Intel, the price is half or a quarter of that.
Right, at least.
One of the things that's interesting is that they haven't updated any of their Indiegogo pricing or options and delivery times, so that they've announced it on the same page, but they haven't updated the advertising.
Oh, are they still selling it off of that page then, technically?
Last time I looked, they were.
Okay. Well, yeah, they should at least be doing that so people know what it is they're going to be getting. I mean, one thing them saying, okay, we tried this, we couldn't make it work. I'm surprised. Of course, they've probably if this is on the up and up, they've probably already bought the processors. You know, I would think most people would say, well, if the prototype didn't work, you know, sorry guys, we could not do this with the hotter processor, so we've dropped the whole thing back to the original proc we were going to go with, and you guys were going to buy it at that price, so you can't really complain. You know, if we charged more for a hotter processor and not delivered, it would have been one thing, but since I said this is, you know, I could certainly see them saying this is a stretch goal. But it may be that they've got a box processor somewhere they've already bought, and so they've got to build a computer that works around those processors rather than the other way around.
Well, the thing that they...
Netminer, you kind of dropped out in the middle of that. Did you have something else to add?
Yeah, I looked at it. Yeah, their crowdfunding total is $1.5 million, and they haven't updated any of their perks or any of the delivery stuff yet.
And sometimes I see, you know, when a project just crashes right through the goals, you know, and you look at a goal and, you know, $500,000, $250,000. How could you design a digital watch for that much money, much less a computer? So, like I said, I was willing not to be the only fool separated from his money, but I'm fully willing to admit this very well could be a blue sky project that never comes off. You know, whether intentionally or just because they can't fit the tech in that form factor.
Is this the same company that made the High Goal?
Yes, it is. This is essentially a High Goal, you know, or was to be a High Goal with a hotter processor, even in the original configuration.
No, because I see somebody on Facebook Marketplace that has one of the old High Goals with the Cherry Trail processor in it for $90. I was thinking about buying it, but I decided to get something else with a similar processor.
Yeah, at the time we were looking at it, and the used High Goals were going for about 140, and you know the Mi's were going for 150, you know. So it, you know, the High Goals were slightly less expensive, but I don't know. I might look at that. Might be something to play around with, at least to get a leg up, because well, I know, but only $90. But that was one of the things that concerned me, because this is supposed to be dual boot Windows and Android. Nothing in their specs about Linux. And I don't expect everybody, all the listeners, to remember, but you know what? Before I ordered this, I emailed the company, and the company president emailed me back and said, "No, don't worry. You know, it'd be real easy to triple boot this into Linux, no problem." Because some of the people who were playing around with the high goal said, "Yeah, it might be possible, but we're not seeing it from here." So that kind of also sold me on it, because I definitely want something running. If I'm going to carry around, I want it running Linux. I don't want something, you know, running Windows. I do have a little brick computer that runs Windows, and didn't want to run the stuff.
The Gigabyte bricks?
Oh, it's not a Gigabyte. It's let me see. I think I have it laying over here. Just a minute. I must have set it back in the tech closet, but I'll take a look at it. Oh, Voyo. I can see the box here. Voyo V2 is what it was.
Cool.
And I couldn't see anything on the internet about, wiping the Windows out, putting Linux on it. I may still eventually try that, but I did. Without somebody that already done it, I kind of hated to stick a memory stick in there with a Linux ISO and wind up with an actual brick out of the whole thing.
Now, I know on some of the reading I did on the High Goal, the old one, with the Cherry Trail, evidently it's a little difficult to get Linux working correctly on the Cherry Trail processor. But it has been done, so it is possible, but from what I understand, it's difficult.
Oh, so in this case, it's more the it was more the processor rather than the form factor and the motherboard and all that.
Right, with the older one, at least from what I read.
Okay, so since we have a M3 mobile processor on this one, then that's that removes that hurdle.
Right, and the only other obstacle that I could see is if they're using some really unusual, like Wi-Fi or a really unusual screen or something that it's going to be difficult to get Linux drivers for.
Right, and you know, one thing Dor always talks about on the Mini PC show is every one of these dual boot Android and something else, you know, computers he's seen, you know, you look at it and there's like 50 partitions in the thing and you don't know what you can touch to, you know, to get Linux on there, which you can resize.
Right.
So, I mean, again, if it doesn't come or it comes and it's something that goes back in the tech closet because I can't find a good use for it, you know, for $150, so be it. I mean, you know, there was, I don't know if it still exists. There was a paid consultant, you know, web-based software that was out there a few years ago. Dor had it. I don't know if he still uses it for consulting, but I mean, so that you could. You show up to the client and then you open up a website, you know, okay, I started, and, you know, you do your whole billing from that. There may be better ways to do it now, but the trouble with it was for some reason it required a Windows server and a 480, you know, just an old 486, not 486, old Pentium 4 sitting there probably wasn't powerful enough. And if it was, wouldn't be worth it for the battery consumption. So if nothing else, you know, I do have uses for, you know, a Windows server, I guess, maybe, as long as it's, you know, completely firewalled so it make it difficult to get in there and make changes to it. I mean, it's a silly thing to say about Windows, but You know, even if I got this and all it was good for was a server sitting there, there are uses for that at times. Okay, the next one was from Kay Wishart, and this is really one I'm surprised he hasn't listened to enough to the Mini PC show to know the answer on that. I actually answered him today. What he's looking for is a battery pack / UPS for Raspberry Pi. Unit needs to supply continuous power when the main power is lost. Any suggestions? And this is something that's really been kicked around a lot on the Mini PC show. I'm surprised he hasn't heard about it. But the easy answer is go to Amazon, get a RAV Power. Now, I got the most expensive, or one of the more expensive ones with the most USB ports. You wouldn't necessarily, you know, for what he's wanting, you to do the one with one or two USB ports and save some money. But the thing about the RAV Power is, it is like looks like a lot of the portable battery power bricks that you plug it in at night, and then, you can recharge your phone from it. But the difference with the RAV Power is it does input and output at the same time. In other words, you can plug it to the wall, pass through, right? You plug it to the wall, plug your phone in or whatever into the RAV Power, and you're charging the battery and the device at the same time. Power goes out, you're still charging the device, until the battery pack runs down, and power comes back on, before the battery runs out, then it's completely seamless. Now, the one thing I would tell Kay Wisher, and I'm sure he knows this, he said it's going to go on the back of like a TV or a monitor. As when he joined us regularly, he been talking about solutions for LCD doing digital signage. Of course, it's not going to do any good to keep the Pi running if the LCD goes down. So I'm certain he's got a different solution for backup power for the LCD. I got, and I don't know if they still make them. I got on sale last year four APC units that are not, well, they are UPSs, but they're not really designed for desktop system. More designed for something small like a Raspberry Pi maybe not that small, but something low powered. Maybe like a printer, I guess. I don't know. But I do have those on my Raspberry Pi. Also, excuse me, on my server, which is a Raspberry Pi with an external USB drive. I did have it on just the Raspberry Pi with battery backup. But, of course, you lose the storage on the USB drive. Having a file server doesn't, there's not much point if the storage is offline. So I've got that, and pretty much my server hasn't gone down, since I got that put in. Got most of the rest of the network set up. Finally got my network hub, or my router, my routers and my switches and all that. They're on a fairly stout UPS. So that was mainly because, last year, Lightning came through all of it and blew my pfSense server. So, that's just one more step, maybe Lightning protection or whatever. I don't know if there's much point having the network if the internet's offline. Well, of course, the uplink to the internet's still, on that whole thing. So I could have at least a brief power outage. And as long as my ISP was still up, still have access to the internet. So, and second, what I tried before that, Kevin, if you're listening, And I also gave you that link. There is a little board that actually same size as Raspberry Pi and is meant to attach to it by like standoffs and same sort of thing. It's a pass-through battery pack, but of course the battery is nowhere near the size of the one on the Rav Power. So it's not going, it'd probably keep your Raspberry Pi going an hour or whatever, but I don't know, past that.
Okay, I do have a suggestion on this. Belkin makes a uninterruptible power supply for routers, which has a 12-volt output. If you're willing to do some hardware mod there, you can grab an accessory for a car, the accessory port for a car, and wire it in. And that 12-volt battery will power a Pi for probably days.
Okay, that's a really good suggestion, Joe. If you can see the show notes now, if you've got that link, can you put it in there for him?
Yeah, I'll find it.
Well, I know even if you, yeah, there are network device UPSs, so you could even put your network devices on a outlet strip, for instance, running off of that UPS, and you could have your router, your switch, whatever, battery backed up.
Well, that's kind of the thing with my server, you know, since I've got to have a UPS for the drive anyway, so I'm running. Well, actually, it still has that little battery attached to it, the daughter board battery. But, you know, it's pretty much off the, both of them are off that mini battery backup. So, and of course, what I don't know exactly what his use case is. Maybe he just has trouble not wanting to reboot the Pis. But, you know, if you wanted to keep your digital signage going, you'd have to have a battery backup, you know, to keep the monitor going. So, you know, I would posit why not plug the Pi into that same backup. But I'm sure Kay Wisher has his reasons for doing it the way he's described. So don't want to second guess him on what, you know, why he would need the Pi up if the monitor it's attached to is down. But this is stuff that's been kicked around by the community pretty well in the last year or so, and so those are the solutions we've come up with. Let's see, Honky, Dave Morris wrote into you about you know, some solutions for, well, not some solutions, but some HPR episodes concerning XDo tool, which you talked about a few episodes ago. And if you don't mind, why don't you start with reminding us all and the audience what XDo tool does?
So I am not all that well versed with XDo tool because I didn't really wind up using it. What I was trying to do was I wanted to remap the left mouse click to a key on the keyboard, and I was trying to see whether XDo tool would do that for me, and it seems like it would, but it would only do it for like very briefly, or it would do it in a certain way that didn't work out the way I wanted it to. And I wound up going with, I believe it was I don't have it in front of me, but I believe the program I went with finally was XKB set to finally remap it, which I still can't get to work. I can't get it to start with a cron job when the computer starts, or I tried going through starting a systemd service with it. I think it has something to do with the program itself, because what have I done before? I've logged out of the session before, and it stopped it from working. I've done something else, and it stopped it from working. So, but I the way the computer is set up right now, I basically just hit the little window key, hit terminal, type in. I have everything set up, all the commands for XKB set in a little bash script called click. So all I have to do is type in click, and then I'm good to go. But earlier I had talked about trying to use X2 tool, and Dave Morris is a little bit behind on his podcasting, so we just listened to episode 106. He says, "Hi, Honky. I'm way behind on my podcast listening and just got to episode 106, Linux Slugcast. You were asking about X2 tool. There have been several HPR shows about it, so I thought you might find the reference useful." And do you want to read out the episodes and the numbers, or do you want to just check out the show notes for that?
Yeah, I think if anybody's interested, they can find that in the show notes.
Yep, check out the show notes. There is about, what is that, five? Five good ones. Two of them are, what's his face, setting up Blather.
Well, hasn't Dave done a lot of stuff on Blather himself?
No, I thought that was John Cole.
Okay, you're right.
I think two of them are the... So John Culp was using Blather to, because Blather is, if people don't remember, it is a application that lets you kind of talk to your computer to have it do things, and I think that's kind of so Blather would be the tool to that would take in your voice and read and turn it into a command. X2 tool would be the tool used to execute that command. At least that's my general understanding of it.
Right, and Blather is not a general translator like, say, your Google Home or something, or your Echo. It's pretty much you go in and set up files, and when I say this word or this word sequence, you do this. I guess you kind of train it like that, but it's not, you say, "Hello, Mr. Computer," and it understands what you want.
Yeah, it seems like something that interprets a voice command to do something. And if I don't remember these two episodes, most of the ones on Blather, I remember of either that or I had heard these episodes and had no idea what I was listening to, so I just kind of, took in what I could and then kind of phased out what I don't understand. But it seems like I said, X2 tool is kind of that Blather is the Blather is the tool that takes in the audio, and then X2 tool is the thing that executes the command.
Okay, like we may be to my topics. Mine are going to be discussion topics, again, I've had a severe lack of doing stuff in the real world, not a complete lack. I did get started on a couple things, downloading ISOs, and I think that's about as far as I got. Interestingly, though, I was downloading pfSense and the newest version. Was it pfSense or maybe not? I think maybe I had the latest pfSense. It may have been that gaming version of Arch that we talked about 2 weeks ago. In any case, that doesn't matter. But the only way to download it was with a torrent. And you might remember a few months ago that I had set up on my a workstation PC, a web client for transmission, so that I could control it graphically from the workstation, but it would be actually be my Raspberry Pi server doing the downloading off the torrent. And this one constantly kept getting no more space left on the drive, and it was getting that because not because my drive had filled up, but because the connection between the web client and the server dropped. So I haven't changed anything, so I don't know. There may be something that's been changed that that transmission web client is not working as it should, or maybe I need to see if I can get an update for it. But so I've learned that much in the last week. But it's just as well I don't have that many real-world projects to talk about, because I've got sort of an update on my understanding of the what we talked about 2 weeks ago, where the Linux kernel was at least trying to adopt a new code of conduct. I think the original one was be excellent to each other, something like that. Perhaps a little flippant, but you know, that's kind of simple to me. But you know, not everybody was always excellent to everybody, including perhaps Linus. You know, at least in some of his more direct language to people. And as an upshoot of this, Linus said, "Okay, I am going to back away from kernel development for a certain amount of time." And 2 weeks ago, we were wondering, well, what does this all mean? Because, you know, it isn't kernel development and promotion of Linux kind of what he does? I mean, you know, if you're going to back away, you know, I have no idea what a kernel developer makes. Perhaps you'd be secure enough, but I don't know what this means, how long he could actually afford to stay away. I don't know. I mean, most of us can't just say, you know, yeah, I'm going to back away from my job. Come, peace out. See you later. And I mean, I'm not criticizing him. I'm just saying.
Let me interject right there. From what I understand from some of the other podcasts I was listening to, he makes like $1.6 million.
Well, yeah, if that kind of money, I could probably live comfortably for quite some time on what I had in the bank. Okay, that's cleared up. Okay, but the whole thing, this goes a lot further, apparently, than just Linus. And I don't know if any other shows have talked about it this week. First I heard about it was yesterday. Since the kernel is governed under GPL2, it's not as if a contributor, if you contribute code to the kernel and you say, okay, this is GPL, it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be GPL forever. I mean, if you're the one person writing that code and you decide tomorrow that I want to put, you know, I no longer want my code to be GPL and part of the Linux kernel, you still have enough ownership of that you can theoretically pull it back out. And if it's something critical to the kernel, then we have a wrecked kernel, and there's talk about, I guess open source doesn't mean that, you know, if a day before you pull it out, I can make a copy of the code and say I'm forking it, and then you take your code out and I stick mine back in, which is identical. Apparently that isn't, well, of course there, you know, there'd be legal ramifications that would probably have to be adjudicated. But the general consensus is no, it doesn't work that way. So, the person they're asking about this is Eric S. Raymond. He said, apparently when he set up the, I don't want to misstep and say something wrong. Well, his Linux organization that he heads, I'll find it in the middle in a minute. But essentially what he said, I researched this, you know, years ago when I created my, this this is ESR talking, you know, when he created his nonprofit Linux group, he said, yeah, I did research, and people could yank their code from the kernel, and they could in theory, you know, because people are running web servers or whatever out there, if it, you know, they could in theory then sue any company, you know, still using Linux to run their web server, you know, if they're still running that part of the kernel. Let's see, where is that? I've got the article here. Same one. I hit this on a someone discussing it on YouTube, and apparently, and then I found the article to document it, and apparently they were using the exact same one. Where is that? Maybe I'm not scrolling down. Okay, it wasn't scrolling down far enough. But what ESR said was that, quote, let me confirm that this threat has teeth. Let's see.
You know, I read a little bit up on this also, and it was a ZDNet article I was reading. And while it's possible, theoretically, that somebody can pull their code, it's really not practical because of so many other things that depend on that code, and it would end up starting to break too much.
Well, that I would think if you were to take it to court and say, yes, I'm going to sue Google for still using Linux, even though I've removed my, you know, my code, and since, you know, and they haven't written a patch to write my code out and write someone else in, you know, I would think you'd be hard pressed to get a court to say, yeah, you know, let's take Google down because you pulled out your chunk of code. Okay, should have been more prepared. I did read this before, but what the whole thing is saying is, or at least what Eric Raymond has said, even though you're not compensated directly for contributing your code to the kernel, you are compensated as prestige. So in other words, maybe you got your job working for Red Hat because you're a kernel contributor, or maybe even in proprietary software, you know. And if someone deprives you of that, then that is a fiduciary constraint upon you. And you, in theory, would have right to sue. Was set and talked about. You know, there in the beginning, one could argue through emails or, you know, there's no like written contract, but through things on emails, handshake agreements, whatever. You know that if you started out participating in contributing to Linux because it's a meritocracy. And then for some reason, someone bans you from that participation because of something that has nothing to do with the quality of your code. It has to do with your personal conduct. Then that would be changing the contract after the fact, and that would give you the right to yank out your code. And part of this is, you know, what's scary about this kind of, it comes down the bottom of the article, one of the people pushing the new code of conduct is a Sage Sharp, and wants to get I guess someone works through works for Google called Theo Tissot, banned from being a contributor because she says he's a sexual assault apologist. Now, I don't know where that comes from. I didn't do that. I haven't done the additional research yet. if somebody's, I'm guessing this most likely has something to do with the, if the Kavanaugh hearings and the Supreme Court, and I don't want to get into that, but I'm just saying, you'd have to be buried under a rock not to be aware of that whole situation. And I'm wondering, did somewhere on the forums or whatever, did this Theo talk about this? Which it would be inappropriate to talk about that, I would think. I mean, that would probably be something the code of conduct. Let's stick to business, maybe. Let's not, if people have been talking about those outside political things. I can't imagine a situation why, that would come into play. What would be more scary is if, this gentleman's Twitters and his Facebook and whatever has been monitored, and somebody said, yeah, completely separate from, posted, anything to do with the colonel, we have found this person has political affiliations that we disagree with. And a lot of us, out there, we're on Facebook, and we comment on politics as well as technology. I'm not a kernel developer. Definitely somebody could look at my Facebook postings and probably say, maybe make the same accusation against me, which I think would be outrageous. But, so I don't know. Did this guy, do a thumbs up on Louder with Crowder video? What did he do? Where did this come from? I mean, again, if this stuff is going back and forth as official forum stuff for the Linux kernel, well, maybe, yeah. Not that this guy, not censoring this guy's opinion, just saying this is not appropriate topics for these forums. However, if this is just completely going off and, finding the guy's political affiliation and saying, no, we don't want this guy associated, that could be very chilling and very scary, in my opinion. So that's what I didn't want to bring politics too much into this, but this does seem to be skewing political.
Well, I mean, how many random Richard Stallman whatevers would cause, people to say, wait a minute, that Richard Stallman or put contributor's name here. Like, a lot of people could eject on political grounds that have nothing to do with their technical contribution. Are we going to have to go PC with everything because somebody doesn't like somebody voted for the wrong presidential person 20 years ago?
Well, and like I said, I don't want to criticize this person. I don't want to say she. That might be offensive to say Sharp. I don't know. It's here in the article, self-described as diversity and inclusion consultant, Hufflepuff, non-binary, agender, trans, masculine. So one of these people that believes, well, I don't want to put words in people's mouths. So it would seem a person who it does not agree that there's two genders and that's it. I'm saying there should be room in the community for that not to matter to anybody. What your political perspective is. I'm not, I would never say, since I don't, if I didn't agree with all the above, well, no, we can't let this person associate with us. I would never say that. And, you know, I would expect the same same respect for my opinions or anybody else's. Now, I'm not saying somebody, you know, shows up with something, you know, praising Hitler or something like that. No, that would be going off a little on the deep end. But, or Mao Zedong or, you know, Stalin or somebody, you know, going either direction. I'm just saying that all opinions should be respected, especially when they have nothing to do with the work people are doing. And that's just my opinion. And I think some, you know, I do not like intolerance of people's opinions. And I don't think it has any place. But I'm not a kernel developer. I'm not smart enough to write the kernel. So I'm not going to have a say in this. But I'm just saying, and I think that this is one of those things. It's a what if, you know, situation. What if somebody took out a critical part of the kernel? And we mentioned Richard Stallman. He's saying, "Whoa, put the brakes on this. Nobody be taking the code out of the kernel." And ESR is like, yeah, well, if you get treated, you know, in a shoddy way, because your political opinions has nothing to do with your code, and especially if you're, I said, if it's completely outside the forums or whatever, you know, you're not getting on the forums and insulting people, which, you know, I think has been done and is not appropriate. Again, I'm not a kernel developer. It's not for me to say what they can and can't do, but yeah, I would say it's probably not appropriate to make a personal attack on anybody in the kernel forums or emails or what whatever. We kind of talked about that 2 weeks ago. Okay, yeah, this can and has been a sort of a toxic environment. People have talked about the whole locker room attitude, you know, probably needs to go because some people do find that intimidating. You know, if somebody's passing around off-color humor or whatever, or making some kind of offensive jokes, not saying you're off someplace, you know, your own forum or whatever. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to restrict freedom of speech or whatever again, but probably not appropriate on something that's supposed to be, you know, professional. A business wouldn't tolerate that sort of thing. So, you know, but ESR was saying, yeah, if you're getting kicked out because your political opinions, which has nothing to do with the quality of your code, then maybe this is a place people should get together and stand up and say, hey, watch it. You know, we could. And the whole other thing, you know, Microsoft and proprietary systems are going to use this. You know, whether it's true or not, somebody from Microsoft is going to go around the company and say, hey, yeah, you know, you're using that Linux thing and it's free and we really like it too. But some 40-year-old guy living in his mother's basement can pull his code out at any time and wreck the whole thing. Okay, yeah, found Open Source Initiative. That was Eric's organization. After he said, let me confirm this threat has teeth, he goes on to say, I researched the relevant law when I was founding the Open Source Initiative. In the U.S., there is case law confirming that reputational losses relating to conversion of the rights of contributor to a GPL product are adjudicable by law. I think they would be adjudicable, but I'm not a lawyer. I do not know the case law outside the U.S., but in countries observing the Berne Convention, without the U.S.'s opt-out of the, in quotes, moral rights clause, that clause probably gives the objectors an even stronger case. Like I said, I don't know all the facts. Maybe these objectionable, I don't know if the objectionable things were actually said, and if they were they posted in anything to do with the kernel development community, any of their official communications. And if not, like I said, if it's completely separate, this, they found the guy's Facebook post or Twitter, or he clicked like on something that somebody doesn't agree with. Wow, that sounds like why would you talk about this and I'm hoping, Tony, maybe we can track somebody down privately at OLF, or if they're if they're willing, maybe at the Birds of a Feather or in some other forum, to take a room and set us down and say, okay, this is the facts, this is what happened. Surely somebody at OLF that's more of an insider and knows exactly what went on, if they're willing to talk on or off record, and so that we can come back and say, okay, this is what's actually happening. And either it's bad, or most likely it's not nearly as bad as I'm making it out. It's not as not probably in real life. It's not as bad as it could be eventually, theoretically. Things seldom are.
Yeah, I think it'd be nice to be able to talk to somebody. I mean, I'm not really in that community or in that group of people doing the development, so I honestly don't know what goes on, but I really doubt that it would come down to any of that. I think it's likely that this is all just a discussion, and then it's never going to come about.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed. And listen, I hope I was trying, I was trying to assert my opinions here this evening without trying to offend anyone. I apologize if there's someone out there that I have offended. My opinion out there, there's room out there for all opinions, especially if they've got nothing to do with the work that you're working on there. So I don't think the one should have anything to do with the other. It is my hope. Okay, I think we've probably talked that one out. The next one, whether this is true or not, I am glad I don't have stock this evening in Supermicro. It has been suggested, let me find the article, and just suggested, because I don't think they ever found confirmation. They were saying there's a rumor floating around that Amazon and other companies 2 years ago quit buying systems based on Supermicro motherboards because they did an audit of the motherboard and there was a little chip on there they couldn't identify what it did. No one ever specifically proved that this was any sort of square or back door, but it was suggested that it very well could have been put on that motherboard under pressure from the Chinese government, Supermicro being a Chinese company. This is something this is not the first time this has been discussed theoretically. It has been done in a laboratory. It has not been found in the wild, but it has been shown in a lab that you could put a backdoor chip on a device like a motherboard, other devices, And we've talked for years, you know, how all our chips essentially are produced in China, and especially our assembled things like motherboards and our mini PCs. And I'm sure the Raspberry Pi people probably go over those things with fine-tooth comb when they come back. But things like the banana pie, the orange pie, you know, do they get the same level of scrutiny? And things like SD cards, thumb drives. It's been suggested you could have some back door built into a thumb drive that could be sending stuff back home to the home country. So yeah, and as it happens, I watched today a really good YouTube video by Tony's fellow Sunday Morning Linux Review host, Tom Lawrence, that really got into it in detail and said, you know, is it possible? Yes, it's possible. Do we know if it's likely? I mean, Amazon has said no, that's not the reason we quit using Supermicro motherboards. Let me see, get here real quick, see if I can. I linked the video. Just a second. Tony, do you remember offhand who is the news organization that broke this? That's the only thing I'm fogging on. It is a respect.
Bloomberg?
Bloomberg, yeah.
Yeah, and I read an article that Krebs on Security wrote a little bit about it. And Supermicro, they claim that they don't know anything about it. They weren't part of it at all. And but what are they going to say? You know, like, oh yeah, we knew we were going to be spying on you. You know, I mean, so it really comes down to tinfoil hat kind of thing. You know, other articles I've read said that there's really no evidence that anything was really exfiltrated or stolen, you know, data because of these chips. So it's, it's interesting, you know, and it's how much do you really trust the supply chain? You know, who's making these chips? And then, you know, from there. So then I was thinking, well, should we be pushing to buy more US built stuff? But then who knows if the US companies are going to be pressured by the US government to put something like that in for them to be spying on you.
Right. We already know that servers are being moved to other countries because of the post 9/11, you know, NSA spying on you stuff that, you know, not, I'm not saying in any of the other countries, especially Great Britain are maybe any better, but you know, that has been a thing that's happened that, you know, our hosting companies complained about, yeah, we are losing all kinds of business overseas because of things like the Patriot Act. And again, I'm just saying, you know, if I were building a new PC and I had my Supermicro motherboard in my cart right now, I would be dropping it, getting something else. Not saying anything else would necessarily be any safer, but you know, it's like one of those things. I'm probably going forward. I am not likely to, you know, if I have options, I'm not likely to click on Supermicro ever again. And this has got to be going to have effect on their. Well, who knows? Not that many of us build PCs. Most consumers of PCs don't know who Smith Micro is. They probably can't find China on a map. No, I shouldn't say that. That's bad. But you know. They buy what, you know, jobber that, you know, HP buys. So, but of course, people like HP, they don't want to be tainted with this brush. I think these were Dell servers originally. You know, Dell doesn't want to be associated with this. So yeah, I would not want to have Supermicro stock today. I don't know. This might blow over. I think it is. I think it probably is a complete. I mean, you know, I'm surprised a news company like Bloomberg ran this without any kind of confirmation. But if you run it and say, okay, there's a rumor that this happened, and that's why Amazon quit buying from Supermicro. They can say that there's a rumor. If one guy believes it, I guess it's a rumor. So, or one person, shouldn't say one guy. I mean, I would not probably, if you home build a computer for Supermicro motherboard, I would probably not be tearing apart my system tonight over this. But again, I'm thinking this will have an effect on their bottom line. I wouldn't be surprised to see like a reorganization and a name change in the future.
Well, there are other server manufacturers, like where does Jetway get their motherboards? I mean, there are a lot of the embeddable motherboards coming out that aren't Supermicro, but who knows whether they come out of a Supermicro factory with somebody else's name on.
Well, exactly. I mean, you tear apart most consumer systems like a Dell or like an HP or whatever. They don't have a recognizable manufacturer name on the motherboard. You may be able to trace the part and find out, yeah, it was made by this third-party concern. But, you know, most people, you know, 95% of the people in this country, if they still have like a Tower PC or whatever, if they open up the side, they're not going to be able to find the name of the motherboard company anywhere inside there. I mean, this is going to affect people building their own PCs, and that's probably about it. And like we said, Tony mentioned, where do you go? If the chips were made in the United States, it would be assembled in China or Mexico or whatever. If the chips were, you know, if it was assembled in the United States, the chips would be made in China. And if we were to start building our own electronics, I would like to see that, you know, bring it all back, say, yeah, we don't trust overseas electronics. We're going to build it all here now. You know, then your $200 motherboard would now be $1,000. I mean, that's still why we, you know, go to Amazon buy the cheapest thumb drives or whatever, you know. But you know, they're all coming from overseas, all from Asia, You know, if you wanted to buy a thumb drive, oh, yeah, it's completely American-made and designed and everything is verified. There's no such thing.
Yeah, I agree. Everything, all manufacturing now is a global process, especially with electronics and chips and that whatnot.
Well, never mind looking at the deliberate CPU breaches, you know, or whatever, chip breaches. Even how much of the patchwork on the Linux kernel recently has been done because of holes in legitimate either CPU or system management stuff that is deliberately, you know, it's supposed to run this way, but somebody finds a way to make, you know, to breach it. So even the stuff that we, quote, trust has been shown, like even the processors or Intel's, you know, onboard management or what have you, have got holes in them. They are usually inadvertent errors, but, I mean, who has to put in a special chip if they can exploit errors that are already in the architecture?
Well, that's a good point. It's probably a lot more vulnerability in the read ahead functions of the Intel and AMD chips, which supposedly are, they're trying to get them disabled in software now. And the and he writes that the Intel's on board corporate management sub processor that's on the chip. Okay, last thing, and I think this also is political. You may remember a few months ago, Google was hit with fines by the EU, and I think they're going to probably fight them out for 30 years. And if they do ever pay anything, it'll be in 30 years money. I don't think it's that for you and me. $15 million would be real money. For Google, that's the last 3 minutes of operation. I think it was $15 million. So essentially on Android, and it's because when you get Android, you get Google Maps, you get, well, actually, I guess you don't, I don't think you usually get the Chrome browser. You usually have to, I've always had to download that separate. But, you know, you get all the little Chrome apps that come in, and they're, you know. And yeah, I can say that's anti-competitive, because since they have all that stuff nobody else is really going to do. So nobody has the opportunity to have a competing little applet, or if they do, nobody uses it. But, you know, when the applet's for free anyway.
Well, it's more that the anti-competitive was that they told the manufacturers that if you want the Play Store on there, you have to bundle all this together. And that's where they got in trouble.
Right. And when this happened, in Washington, you know, the article mentioned, and I didn't find the article to link. There was an article. I can't find it on anything. And I had a lot of stuff that linked to the European sanctions. But this article was saying, it looks like the domestic regulatory commissions are coming after them for the same thing. And the thing is, months ago when this came out, Donald Trump said, he was already saying Bezos is the devil and Amazon is the Antichrist and they don't pay proper taxes, they don't pay for shipping, and, you know, the government's going to come down on them. If I was U.S. government, I'd be more worried about Amazon coming down on the government. But, that whole thing, at the same time, he was saying, Trump was saying that the Google founders, they're the greatest guys of all. I love them. Of course, since then, we've had YouTube being part of Google now. We've had the whole thing come out, conservative host getting defunded, gun channels, any conservative talk channel, conservatives flat out being banned from various social medias. And including some Google stuff, and my opinion of Trump, he's an old guy, doesn't know a thing about technology. I mean, probably that last part of that generation that barely knows how to turn the computer on, doesn't know how anything works, and is relying on other people to talk in his ear and tell him about stuff. So, he's obviously made a bunch of decisions that we would think are not good for the industry, not good for the internet. Net neutrality being one of them. I think a lot of us in the community would say that Donald Trump's been wrong on a lot of stuff. And I think a lot of the stuff, people being defunded or banned or whatever, has changed his idea of Larry Page and Sergey Brin, and he may have gone to the you know, in where he may have been shielding Google before, he may have changed his mind, is all I'm saying. But I can't know that for a fact or anything like that. But this does, there does seem to have been a 180 in the regulatory agencies regarding antitrust. And like Tony said, yes, it's because not so much that they had the stuff on there, but saying, yes, if you want the Play Store, which you pretty much got to have, unless you want it to be a static device or you've got your own Play Store like Amazon does, then, you know, you got to have all this other stuff bundled. Most of, you know, there's a few annoying things in there. Most of the stuff would be stuff I'd have to go out and download anyway. So, doesn't bother me too much. But, yeah, I can see from a legal standpoint that could definitely be a problem.
Well, look at the Chromebook.
Well, yeah, but, you know, you can install Android apps on, I think, any Chromebook now. It was just a few select ones. And, well, I guess you're right. You probably don't have all that bundled stuff. You have to opt in on pretty much everything once you start installing Android apps.
Well, the Chromebook is built on a expanded Chrome browser. Now, I suspect a lot of the Linux plugins that they're making, or their Linux shim layer, is a way of them getting around this problem.
Perhaps. And you guys remember when I was trying to install Android apps native to Linux and not having a lot of success. And, you know, it's not just Chrome. It actually is a version of Linux with Chrome. I think still Ubuntu. I could be wrong. With Chrome running on top of it. It's just as you can't really get to the Ubuntu part. So if they can run Chrome apps on a Chromebook, there's no reason I shouldn't be able to run a Hulu app on my Linux desktop, you know, and then pick a show and throw it over to my from my desktop rather than having to go find my phone or my Chromebook and doing the same thing. I mean, it's a minor point. It's just a minor inconvenience. It's like I need to exercise getting up out of my chair and walking two rooms over. But, you know, it's just frustrating from the technological aspect. Also, one thing I wanted to mention on our original article, you know, where we were talking about the kill switch and people pulling their code and breaking Linux. I am wondering, you know, they've been talking about, you know, Google writing their own underlying operating system and replacing Linux in Android. You know, so it would become all proprietary. I'm wondering if any of this now is, seeing that this problem could potentially happen and not, you know, wanting something that they could control that wasn't Linux.
Wait, isn't there a Chrome app that will allow you to cast a Chromecast?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could install... Well, there is, because I was watching... Krypton... through Chrome, and you couldn't get, you know, there wasn't an app to get to it, but I could go to the sci-fi website and watch episodes of Krypton, and I thought that was going to go on forever, but I think they only had the first three or four. And then I could click up in the corner and say, okay, show this also on my TV. But unlike Hulu or YouTube or whatever, you know, then I can't then switch to another app. You know, I have to leave that page running in the forefront in Chrome to see it on the TV. So I'm essentially looking at the web page on my TV at the same time it's on the Chromecast. So that would be long term. That would be tedious because that, you know, then I'd have to have another device to do stuff, not watching TV while I'm sitting there watching TV. So, yeah, if that's the question you're asking, Joe, yes.
Okay.
I have heard the same things about Google really dropping the base, the AOSP as the base, and really spinning their own Android. I really thought that they were ready to have to spin, to put, you know, put those on the new Pixel devices. But then I haven't heard anything about it for the last couple months, so I don't know if it was ready or not.
Well, let me put it this way. They've had 30 years to get for RMS to get the herd running, and they haven't got it. So maybe they've run into this, similar roadblocks. They may well have intended to have an alternate underpinning operating system going by this time.
Yeah, I'm trying to look for that article that I read, but I'm not seeing it.
And that's what I was trying to torrent. Haiku. The latest version of Haiku, because someone said that the latest version is better than it has been. So sometime I've got a machine, I can install stuff bare metal, so I'll stick it on there and let you guys know.
Is it Fuchsia?
That's kind of sounds right.
I'm looking, there's a Wikipedia page on Google Fuchsia.
It's based on a new...
Go ahead.
Well, probably same thing you were going to say. It looks like it's based on a new microkernel they're calling Zircon.
Yeah.
I don't know. They may have looked ahead and said, hey, you know, probably would... Like Tony says, probably would never happen, but it could, and we would be, you know, we would be super up the bad river, you know, if somebody ever did something to kill Linux.
If anything actually did get pulled from the kernel, I'm sure it wouldn't be anything more than a temporary setback. There would still be versions of the exact same open source stuff out there, and somebody would reverse engineer it with source code, so put it back in.
Well, see, that's problematic. I mean, the way I understand it, it's not like you can say, okay, I forked it from when it was open source, and so I'm going to stick it right back in there. Obviously, if it was that easy, nobody'd be worried about it.
Right. But with the source code as a reference, you reverse engineer it. I mean, it's there. It's showing you what needs to be done. And because of the way the licensing was, you're not going to get sued for having something similar. So rewrite it.
Well, I mean...
that's what Solomon did.
You know, look at the years of court battles with the company thought they bought Linux. You know, and one of the things was looking at thought they bought Unix. I'm sorry, thought they bought Unix. It'll come to me.
SCO,
yes. You know, when they looked at Linux and they looked at Unix, both, you know, and the same procedure, both written in C, there were striking similarities because when you're using that whole keep it simple, stupid rule, I mean, if two people set out to write that same little bitty snippet of code, there's only so many, if it's that simple, there's only so many ways you can write it. And that was, you know, that was kind of the Linux argument. Yeah, it's not because we copied the Unix code. It's just, you know, this is a simple little algorithm. How many different ways do you think there are to write it?
Yes, you're setting the higher order bit in this structure can be done how many ways?
Good example. I mean, one of the major projects that, or the major project, I guess, that ESR heads is the, you know, the whole real-time clock. Now, it's not just him. I mean, and if we're talking about people you know, wanting to weed out anybody who is not exactly politically correct. You know, ESR is like target number one. But I mean, I don't think his real time code is just. It's probably a lot of it's his. It's probably not just his alone. So, you know, could he say, yeah, I'm going to pull this chunk of code and break Linux today? He might be able to. I don't know. Be interested if he show. I've never seen him in OLF. It'd be cool if he was. Have seen Mad Dog once. He could probably put a strain on a bunch of this. I mean, he would know all the players at least. Of course, it's too bad this didn't come up before. Self, because Eric Raymond was there, and I mean, oh man, that would have been a great article for HPR or whatever. You know, sit him down and say, because I'll bet a lot of this was brewing by that time. you know, if we'd known, sat him down and say, okay, set us straight on all this stuff, because we are, you know, we're dealing with half truths and rumors, probably. In fact, probably if you could get a hold of him, he might actually do that a phone interview or something. I think I'm going to be too busy. I don't know. But if somebody out there wants to run with it, maybe somebody for Sunday morning show.
We'll see how it goes on.
Okay.
We've been trying to stay away from a lot of the political things and really stick to the, you know, more of the tech and the software. So, but we'll see what happens.
Well, I can certainly understand that, because this whole thing is a big sign. It says Grail all over it. All right, last thing I had, and I've been talking to a couple friends, and I want to present to you guys on this show, but kind of been lot of the impetus for this is looking at OLF this week, and not a lot of people are coming in from out of town who usually do. I know you know Tony, you and the Detroit crowd, and you said you're going to be there. I don't know about the rest. And I know Kevin O'Brien told me he'd see me there. So, but other than that, there's Taj, who I think you've met, and also Lyle from U-Random are going to be there. We've been talking about it. I don't think I'm talking out of school to tell people, oh, no, they're not going to be home. I'm going to be there. Of course, Joel's there in town too. But other than that, I haven't heard of anybody coming. And so we had been talking a little bit about maybe trying to do a soft reboot of Oddcast Planet Live. And for those listening who aren't aware what that was, we did that was something conceived at Southeast Linux Fest. Oh, probably about a year or two before I started even meeting up with other podcasters in real life space. But it was said, you know, we get together and then everybody goes off for talks and we get together at a con and everybody goes to talks. But a lot of, you know, the factor is social, you know, let's try just everybody taking a vacation together. Well, not everybody, but a lot of podcasters who are not going to a con, so you can spend the whole day, you know, just talking and BSing, like we do here every 2 weeks. And so that actually next year that got organized and I was part of it, or was a year, either the next year or year and a half later. I happened to be part of it, and we met out in Philly, and Last Known God was sort of our guide around town. It was a lot of fun, and then next year we were there at a old amusement park in it. We rented a like a cabin sort of thing, but we went to amusement park in central Pennsylvania, and that was a lot of fun. And then we never got anything really organized and together since. And I could have probably contributed more to getting that organization done. So some of it's on me. But since, I've just been going to regular cons and stuff. And, you know, we were talking that probably if we were to want to regenerate that, it's too much in the first year to say, okay, let's all go get a cabin and take a vacation together, or apartments or whatever, you know, get a place for the weekend. Let's do something a little less ambitious, and that would be, you know, do an existing venue. You know, I was thinking maybe sell for PenguinCon. That may not be convenient for everybody. And put it out there in the Linux podcasting community. You know, just pick a thing and say, this is going to be our target, that we're all going to try to make it to this event and all hang out with each other. And then, you know, all the things will be set up, the hotel rooms and all that stuff will be part of the con and all that. And, So I'm just wanting to see if there's, you know, from other podcasters, if there is still any kind of interest in doing something like this. And if there is, right now you can drop me a line at 5150@linuxbasement.com. And 5150 is all written out as words, not numerically. I think a lot of people are familiar with that address anyway. And, if we did anything, it wouldn't be for 6 months to a year or whatever, you know, figuring out what time of year everybody's convenient with. I used to have some constraints because everybody said, oh, well, we want to do a three-day weekend. And I said, well, you know, I can't do 4th of July since that's harvest. Well, I haven't cut my own wheat in a couple of years anyway. And that gets down to, if I fixed the combine I have, which is 30 years old, which is better than the 50-year-old ones I used to have that I couldn't get parts for anymore, I've still, you know, got neighbor sharecropping with me. They can get all my fields cut out in an afternoon, where it would take me a week with that old machine breaking down and my old trucks breaking down. And it's getting where the co-ops don't want to stay open for harvest for a week in the evening. They get a little tiffy about that. So I want to get back where I can do stuff like that, but I am thinking financially and logistically, it's just not possible. So that leaves that time of year open for me. So ironically, where I think, you know, I think most of the people I talk to, they have less and less time, flexible time, you know, where they're not committed to doing something else. That I seem to have more these days. So if I seem too enthusiastic, oh guys, yeah, let's go do that, you know, that's why. That's me. I'm not as tied down as I once was. So that's probably way too much personal information. But so bear with me if I seem like, oh yeah, this is doable, and we can all get together, and you know, because I know everybody's got commitments and hard to get away and hard financially. Definitely understand that. But you know, if we could, and instead of being spread out over all these different events, you know, if there was just one a year where you know, more normal of us could get together. I think that would be interesting and worthwhile. So it may not be. So that may be just my opinion, but I just wanted to bounce that around. If anybody, You know, probably if there's enough interest, I do have my net server, cloud server, and you know, probably wouldn't take up any bandwidth to set up like a forum and a mailing list and all that kind of stuff, where we could do our organization. So probably went on way longer on that than the topic is worth, but you know, just bear with me. This is not something. It's all going to be organized and done next week. It's I said couple of guys who also are interested. I said, yeah, probably we want to give at least a year on planning for, if not more, for something like this to get off the ground again. Okay. I am tired of hearing myself talk, which I rarely say.
Texas Linux Fest?
I had thought of that. You know, again, that was something that was not possible because of Harvest, and now it now is. Probably if I did that, I wouldn't be doing self. I think they're usually, if not the same week, within a week of each other. I think they're the same week this year. But yeah, I haven't ever been, and especially if Tracy and some of those guys I guess you're down there too. So definitely.
Yeah, I'm like 4 hours from there.
Yeah, definitely. I want to get to Texas Linux Fest 1 year. I don't know if that would be, you know, if that would be optimal for everybody, but you know, maybe next year I'll go there. I already mentioned that, but that's what I want to get to. I guess Siegel was last week. That's a Linux Fest that's in Seattle. Last weekend. I was thinking, but you know, of course, that's too close to OLF to get organized. I'm barely getting organized enough to go to OLF. So winters are usually out for me because I am feeding cattle once the grass dies. And I hate to ask anybody to come out here and feed bales for me while I go on vacation. But other than that, and really there aren't that many, you know, fests that I know of that time of year. I'm sure somebody will email us, oh yeah, here's these 50 fests that are in the winter. But anything at least is up for discussion.
I hadn't heard of the Seagull, but I looked up their website and they said that it's on November 9th and 10th.
Oh, okay. I guess I got the dates wrong. Well, I was thinking it wasn't that close to self. And I saw something here last week. I thought said, oh, yeah, it's that weekend. Oh, well, I missed it.
Well, also, you may want to not only use your network thing for organizing this Appalachian meeting, but consider getting segments of consensus from all of the podcasters that various people can see. I mean, those people who can see people on the Seattle end of the universe, meet the podcasters that are up at those events. Those that are down in Texas would meet podcasters that can go to that event. Not necessarily taking it as a big chunk, but taking it so that you can get some kind of consensus and everybody through email or your central server of some kind gets the minutes of the regional confabs.
That's a very good suggestion. Actually, we've kind of been doing that, or at least the Podnuts guys have. It's just the last couple years. You know, I think a lot of it's if Door can't go, then nobody goes. But I think a lot of, you know, I don't want to put it all on Door because, you know, I think a lot of it's been just money and time has been tight for everybody. But you see, Netminer, that it used to be the way, at least for 2 or 3 years running, not Siegel, but Northeast Linux Fest. You know, Dor would fly out there, and then literally they'd rent a van and drive up the coast from Bund and pick up, you know, people all the way there. And there would be other people fly in, but pretty much the West Coast guys went there. And then Dor would also go to the to OLF, and the East Coast Pod Nuts contributors would meet him there. So and I got in on one of those last one that they had all the guys together. So
I'm just saying that if you segment things, because again, whatever happens to the podcast situation, the actual creation will be dispersed. So what you're basically trying to do is, if I'm reading things right, is to have a central clearinghouse for Linux podcasts, and maybe things like Hacker Public Radio also should be considered to be thrown in the mix.
Oh, definitely. I mean, this is just an initial thing. Maybe try to get out word of mouth, but eventually, you know, if I get some positive feedback, then the next step would be to, you know, draft a promo or something. You know, we're trying to get stuff together. And as far as the central clearinghouse on who's going to be where and whatnot, you know, it depends on everybody's opinion, you know, because it seems like when I go in and ask sometimes, you know, are you going to be there? Are you going to be there? You know, because I don't want to spend money if somebody's going to be there, which really shouldn't be the way it is. You should be going for the information, and you see your friends, that's a side benefit, you know, but, you know, that's a lot of money to go out and spend and then not see any of the sessions. That's kind of what we did that one year. We had the table out there to promote podcasting at OLF. The only session I actually attended, Doors, never had as much fun before at a regular con. So I'm not saying that that was a bad thing. But
hey, do you know if anything like that's happening this year?
Not that I know of. Less and less people are going to anything. Definitely nothing. There's no table at OLF this year. I mean, far as I know, Tony, you know, you know if Mary and Tom are coming, and the new guy, which I hope so, because I'd like to meet him. Never have. Kevin, me, Joel, and Lyle and Taj are the only people I know. I haven't heard anything about Murph, but you know, I'm not like his keeper, and you know, it's you know, so you know, I. And this kind of netminer, you know, I have wanted kind of to do the thing, you know, have a list of conferences and, you know, have people in the community come in and be able to say, yeah, I'm going to that. Some people, I get the impression there's a lot of people in the community are not entirely comfortable with participating in something like that. It wouldn't bother me at all. Obviously, it wouldn't bother you. And I know you don't get around much, so what we really ought to do is just all show up at your house one weekend.
Hey, I can do that.
Yeah, hey, I have my backyards all tore up, so everybody, if you bring a shovel, I, you know, everybody can come stay here and help me finish my patio.
Well, that's what I'm saying is, if you try to get an Appalachian-type meeting going together, you may be going a bridge too far. But if you say, if you get somebody to get a consensus from whoever runs into whoever at the different cons, then you can put it online. And this is the news we get from Northwest Linux Fest. I don't believe you're going to Northeast Linux Fest if you're headed for Seattle.
Oh, did I say Northeast? See, and that, we, you know, I've always wanted to meet Jonathan. Even if he's not hurting it, we need to do a Northeast Linux Fest again so I can meet Jonathan and Pokey. And I wasn't suggesting that, if we are to get together, just because it had been Pennsylvania twice, it has to be in Pennsylvania again. I'd like to move a little further west. Maybe Pittsburgh. Now I know some podcasters in Pittsburgh that I'd like to hang out with too. So, but yeah, since we've had two on the East Coast, it's hard to attract anybody to the Midwest to do something. Though I don't know, we almost had a bunch of people show up at Kansas Linux Fest a couple years ago. We didn't have one this year. They decided to take a break. I hope, they were hoping maybe to get it moved to a different city in Kansas, get a different set of people. And a bunch of people said they were enthusiastic until it got to the point of actually doing something, I think. So the Wichita people said, yeah, two years in a row has been enough. We need to take a break. But they said they have said they promised to come back next year. We'll see. If not, that, you know. Again, if you're a Linux fan out in Kansas, I mentioned my email, if we're just going to do an informal meetup sometime, if anybody around here, because I used to think I was about the only Linux user in Kansas. We've had a fest, so obviously I'm not, but there's probably not a lot out here in South Central Kansas, so I am fairly approachable on things like that in hopefully a non-creepy way. So somebody wants to do a small get together, just to meet for dinner or something, get to know, say howdy. Yes, I also listen to podcasts and use Linux, or not. Whatever. Like I said, this is not a big whole pressure thing. I just want to see if there's, what kind of interest out there, because I don't want to have it not happen for lack of trying. So, and I know at least two people who are kind of interested in it. So, we'll see if there's any more than that. And, Tony, I am bringing the hearse up, planning to, so don't tempt me. I might throw a spade in the back of it, show up at your house.
That's funny.
Well, I'm just saying, I know I'm not mobile like that, and also, by getting together with the people that are going to be together, you're working with entropy instead of against it.
Right, and part of this is, I've seen, I've been going to more cons, I've been seeing a decline in attendance by people that I know. So, this is completely self-interest, because I like to hang out with my friends. I like to see more of them. So, and that's kind of the impetus behind this. And if anybody else is interested in hanging around, and and if everybody's too busy, that's cool too.
Yeah, well, the one thing you don't want is an Appalachian meeting, because that one was mostly of interest to the FBI. Big mob thing. So I may be dating myself.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've heard of that one. Okay, I know what you mean.
Now, So
of course, with the Patriot Act, they may still be interested in anyone who's doing podcasting, especially if you bring your PGP keys with you.
You're saying, Honky?
Yeah, sorry. I'm in the Northeast. The only cons I've been to is 2 years of NELF, and I know there's a decent amount of podcasters up here in the Northeast area. Do you think that there's a way we could probably get something together where a bunch of us meet up, and would it be? I'm trying to think of what would be better, whether it'd be better to try to come up with some sort of a meetup, or would it be better to try to resurrect NELF?
Well, I think a meetup would probably be the first step in resurrecting NELF. So, you know, you might try to get everybody together. I know, like I said, I think Jonathan has got other family and somewhat priorities now. I don't know if he'd be interested. I do think Pokey definitely would be interested in at least attending. So, like you said, probably the first thing is, you know, get together where everybody's talking to each other and then saying, you know, yeah, we're going to get together and spend a couple hours having dinner, and then, you know, I'd do that first, and then, you know, before you do anything huge, and we're going to run a hall, and we're going to, you know, you know, contact hotels or whatever and get a block of rooms before you know how many people would be interested in coming. I think starting small would probably be the best way to go on that. But I like what I'm hearing, you know, resurrect NELF, and if you can pull it off, count on me.
Well, I know one possible center. I don't know how much commitment you could get for them, and I haven't been there in a while. But there is a pretty good Boston Linux users group, VLUG, Linux and Unix users group. So they might be a local resource if you're going to do the...
Yeah, the people who took over in Wichita were essentially the Linux developer community and the makers group. One thing, I think I've mentioned before, they were using like the corporate model, and they thought, you know, they're going to have corporations come in and pay $5,000 a table. I went to the meeting and said, believe me, ain't happening, you know. But they were, you know, they got support from Wichita State University to get free hosting on that. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been possible. Honky, wasn't NELF actually on Harvard campus for when it happened?
Yes, but that's like that was mostly because. It was hosted by Jonathan, and I'm trying to remember the other guy's name.
Well, I know here locally, you got to have a professor on board, because you just go to the university and say, yeah, we would like to use the services of the university for a weekend. And it's like, fine, $6,000. But if you can get a professor as a sponsor, then you can get it for free.
Well, I would not overlook... there's UMass Boston here that has fairly good access for the public. Again, you may have to go hunting a professor or hunting a dean or hunting something, but, you know, there are some options.
Well, you know, the first year, I won't say we, because I had really nothing to do with organizing it. I hope I helped maybe inspired a little bit, but the first year of Kansas Linux Fest, you know, was held in Lawrence, which is the home of Kansas University, but it was held at the Lawrence Public Library, and it was a free venue. I thought it went incredibly well. It was great, but you know, came back, we had noise complaints. They said, don't, you know, you know, don't be shouting down the hallway at people. And it wasn't like we were running up and down the hallway acting like high school kids, but it was, you know, they had rooms kind of like the classrooms or meeting rooms or whatever that you usually see at a conference. And of course you would have people show up 5 minutes before, move from one room to another and then stand outside the room waiting for it to get done. And a little quiet talking, you know, as you would do. And apparently the library, you know, nobody was shouting. Nobody was making a huge noise. But apparently the library patrons done come unglued. You know, because of that. How can you allow any, you know, polite conversation in a library? And they weren't like, you know, they weren't like, don't talk at all. They were just like, you know, yes, keep your voices low. Don't shout, hey, 50, you know, waving your arms, you know, down the hallway or whatever. Is it, you know, and we understood that. I thought we were doing really good. So libraries are probably not the optimal venue. You'd think they would be.
Well, what I'm thinking is, in Boston and surroundings, including Cambridge and whatever, you can't throw a rock without hitting a university or a college or something that has auditoriums and has classrooms and whatnot.
Right, and I would think a tech school would probably be, you know, not a regular 4-year university, but a tech school might be a really good option if you can find one interested.
Well, we have MIT, we have some others, and some, even UMass, you know, it had a computer science department back when I was, or was developing a computer science program back in the dark ages.
Well, I meant either tech school.
You're talking about damn. One of them around here, the name just skips my memory.
Well, for a nationally known name, DeVry or something like that, you know, you, like I said, it wouldn't have to be for your university even.
There's one in this area that's begins with W, but I can't. But I'm page faulting on the rest of their name.
Just to be facetious, I'm saying we should call the was it the one day one night people and make them prove they actually have a campus.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of Phoenix University or whatever that was campuses around here, and I think most of them have evaporated. Also, Northeastern has been very good at borrowing access to high schools and whatnot back in the day, so they may have connections where we could even get a large high school facility for some purposes on a weekend.
I think that would all be good if we actually decide to, well, if someone decides to try and do NELF over again, resurrect NELF. I think if anything, I think 50 was right. It'd probably be a good idea just to try to see what we can gain for interest, just as a general interest. I mean, I know there's actually a lot of, like you were saying, there's the Boston lug and there's an MIT lug. So there's two lugs up there. I know there was that when I know they were trying to get MIT for the last NELF. They were talking with the guys there who do the MIT lug. I don't know what happened with that, but they might help out. I mean, if we can try and talk to those two lugs, there might be some interest with them. But I think it might be better off if we try anything to begin with. It would be like more in the lines of a very relaxed hall. Or somewhere where board games and alcohol is not in mild rowdiness would not be frowned upon.
Yeah, that's the trouble. Most of your universities, you know, it depends. A lot of them have now gone to where, yeah, you can serve alcohol, and then, you know, we got to serve it, and, you know, they're going to make a profit out of it if you're serving alcohol. What you might consider for a venue, just getting people together, hit a couple of those. There are these video arcade bars, you know, where you've got the old console machines, or not consoles, but coin-op machines, but they don't take coins anymore. If you're there drinking beer, you can play coin-op all night long. Of course, there's one not directly connected to OLF, but there's one above Barley's now, which is where everybody gets together when they go to Columbus. And Wichita Linux Fest, actually, that's where they have the after party. Not Wichita, Kansas Linux Fest, where they've had the after party. There's a place in Wichita. So,
This is definitely Linux. I mean, we start out with a Podcast Central, and now we have a resurrecting the Northeast Linux Fest. I mean, you know, it's just unintended consequences. I'm delighted at it.
Oh, me too. I mean, I'm glad. I'm, you know, I didn't know there was a lot of interest. I mean, I knew Pokey, he would definitely show up. You know, I don't know if he's got time to do a lot. Like I said, I know Jonathan. I'm pretty sure he's got other priorities. I mean, I wouldn't count him out, but I don't think he would be say, yeah, you know, I'll ramrod that again. I think he'd definitely participate. And you said you knew some other people up there, Honky. So yeah, probably the first thing is getting everybody together in a room. Well, probably the first thing is get everybody together, going back and forth on email, then get everybody together in a room. And yeah, I think there's a lot of people who, I never made it to NELF. Like I said, I had more restrictions on me back then. So, it, you know, I always wanted to, and definitely you guys get something going, I'll do whatever I can to help out. So, well, you know, that's a trouble. That's a trouble. The Kansas Linux Fest, I always thought, well, man, you know, everything's online now. Yeah, it doesn't matter where I live to help out. But really, yeah, it does. The people there on site, you know, have a lot better opportunity to do stuff than I can from out here 70 miles away.
Well, the one thing you were talking about, the server or whatnot, putting up a Discord or something. I don't know Discord well enough to know whether it would work for this purpose, or some kind of common conversational, interactive, whatever. We have two purposes, the Oddcast Planet thing and the Northeast. So there's two channels right there of whatever you build up. So we could, and the only thing we need is some way of getting a record of it so people could study what people have been saying over time.
Yeah, I am going to avoid Discord. I think it's a nice program. I am part of some Discord channels, but there are people who absolutely won't join it because it's not open source.
I'm just saying, something that has, there have to be an open source, there's probably an open source clone or something that we could for discussions of similar kind.
Well, I'm on URandom's Mattermost server, and I prefer it to Discord personally. I mean, Well, like Discord, it's not in the I had to install it outside repos, and actually I'd been off of the Podnuts Discord for quite a while because, you know, it's there's a dev. It, you know, it, if you are on a derivative of stupid me, what am I thinking of?
Well, I don't know Mattermost either, but anything of that type, definitely, you know, something. I only know Discord because a couple of places have people have put up their Discord link.
Well, I mean, my head is breaking here. Upstring of Ubuntu. That is what I'm trying to think of.
Debian.
Yes. If you are on a version of Debian, there is a dev file that you can easily install with a Discord. And you know, I didn't realize it wasn't really getting on. I mean, because I hadn't spent much time on it. But you know, for a while they'll say there's a new version out there. Do you want to install it? And you know, it gives you the dev and or other, and you click other, and then I eventually found out it wasn't loading Discord in the background, and then it's not that hard really. You just wipe out user home Discord. That's you wipe out the program directory, and then you re-download, you expand back into it, and all your settings and stuff, of course, are under your home directory, so you're not overriding anything. So it's not that hard. Oh, okay, yeah, that's one of the things I did in the real world. I'll have to talk about that next time. Yeah, I knew I did something for real this week.
Tom, we are getting late. I had a couple things.
Yeah, Joe, go ahead. We have been rambling on and on.
Okay, well, I wanted to go over some of the projects that I've been talking about recently and just let everybody know where it's at. The Dell Venue Mint 8 machine that I've been working on, I think I'm pretty much done with that. The 1 gig of RAM is a bit of a limitation on it, but I've still been able to make darn near everything work. I'm still having mic problems, but I know that that's with one of the setup files. So I might fix that, but then I'm probably going to end up giving it away because I don't think I'll be able to sell it with Mint on it. But I will be working on a different tablet later on in the year, since my daughters broke both of their Asus T100s, which they were using for school. They shattered the screens, and so I bought a T102 that is being shipped to me, and I'm going to give them my T100, fix the screen on one of theirs, and then put Linux Mint on that. And I'll let you all know how that goes. There's some pretty good write-ups on putting Linux on the T100, so I'm not worried about getting that done. It's a project that I've wanted to do for a couple of years now. And then the Brix mini PC that I have with the A8 processor, working like a champ in my garage. It's the one I use when I'm out there now. Two screens, one's 42 inches, the other's 32 inches, or 47 and 32, something like that. But after I replaced the USB hard drive I was using with an M-SATA, it is just really smooth. I have hardly had any problems with it. Occasionally, it does end up
slowing down a lot, but I'm pretty sure that's because I've only got 4 gigs of RAM in it, and I'll eventually upgrade that to 8, but that's not cheap for just getting 8 gigs of RAM DDR3. So I'll have to look around for some deals on that. And then my main gaming laptop is currently running Ubuntu, and I did get the NVIDIA drivers finally working, and I kind of want to switch back to Linux Mint, but because of all of the problems that I had with the NVIDIA drivers, even with the write-up I did on how to get it working correctly, I am still concerned about wiping everything out and starting over again. That was pretty much it.
Okay, glad to hear that. And like I said, probably place out real quick. I did want to mention, if anybody had questions about either one, when I went up to check on the firearm that I had questions about, went to a town that had theaters in it. Availed myself yesterday of a couple movies. First one was the House What Has a Clock in the Walls. That was pretty good. You know, I recommend that. I'm not sure it's one I would have gone see at the theater instead of waiting, but it's pretty funny. I'm not usually, I think Jack Black, he thinks he's funnier than I think he is, but I like that movie.
Is that a kids movie?
I would say so. I don't think there's anything that's going to scare kids.
Actually, I took my little kids to it and didn't realize it. They were frightened out of their minds the whole time. My son still has nightmares. So I would say like 10 and up maybe, but don't take any little kids.
Okay, I probably don't remember being that young that well. A lot of special effects. I didn't think there was any scary stuff, but I know it's not real, you know. That's the difference between us and kids. Looked interesting. One of the previews I found interesting, The Grinch What Done Stole Christmas is going to be remade. This one is animated, and Cumberbatch is going to be the Grinch. Cumberbatch is one of my favorite actors, but he's in everything these days. And the other thing, because it started yesterday, I saw Venom. I actually liked it better than most of the critics seem to have. It's kind of like, I mean, it's not up to, say, the Avengers movies, not as fun. You know, trying to be funny, not as funny as Thor Ragnarok or The Guardians. I think probably funnier than Ant-Man. You know, Ant-Man seems to try real hard. You know, the whole thing that's saying, oh, you know, it's a train wreck, and yeah, there's some funny jokes, but they're just funny jokes added in by Tom Hardy, and, you know, but other than that, the script is bad. I didn't really see that. I mean, no, it's not like watching an Avengers movie. You probably can wait till it comes out on video. But, you know, if you happen to be near a theater and you want something to see, it wouldn't be a bad pick.
Evidently, there's going to be a lot of the expanded universe for Spider-Man coming out in the near future because of licensing.
Well, we'll see. It kind of seems like everything is going to finally be thrown together. And if they want Wolverine in the Avengers movies, they can have him, you know. And I think Jackman has even said he's not 100% opposed, you know, since Logan would have been, you know, in the future from today. You know, it's hard for him to do. I mean, The Gifted is back. And, you know, without the budget that they have of Logan, you know, it's supposed to be, what, 10, 15, 20 years in the future. But there's no cars in there that are newer than 2018 models. So, you know, they don't have the budget to make the future Chrysler 300 like they did for Logan. So, you know, the TV shows, there's definitely some suspension of disbelief. I guess there's going to be a Harley Quinn cartoon for DC.
Yeah, I saw the preview for it. I wasn't overly interested in it, but I am interested in Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, yeah, that does look good. And the post-credits trailer for Venom is essentially the first 5 minutes of Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, anybody else excited about Doctor Who on Sunday?
Well, I don't think I get it here on... of course, you can always stream it, sort of, but it's not showing up till my birthday, I think, on Amazon.
Okay, well, BBCA will have it.
Right, yeah, and we'll see the reviews. I mean, I'm against these early reviews. It's a woman, so it's got to be horrible. I mean, I've seen the trailers, and maybe I'm not particularly impressed. I mean, I'm a Doctor Who fan, and if I don't like it, I'll probably keep watching it till they switch doctors anyway.
Right. If you don't like it now, just give it 3 years.
Exactly. You know, I mean, there were people who hated the first new doctor.
Capaldi.
You know,
Eccleston.
Eccleston's my favorite of the modern day doctors. Of course, nobody compares to Tom Baker.
That is true. I'm still a Pertwee fan.
Yeah, I didn't get as much of him growing up just because they didn't, you know, they hadn't recovered all of them really by that time.
Right. Well, Pertwee was the third doctor, and I don't remember any of his being missing. I know that there's still a bunch of the second doctor stuff missing, but I really enjoyed the third doctor, but I didn't really start seeing Doctor Who in the U.S. until the Baker era.
Right, they had him on PBS, and unlike the original show...
At like 2 in the morning.
Well, no, actually, they had him in the afternoons, but on my local station, and probably after you, but instead of doing the 30 minutes, they would do the whole story at once. So sometimes it was an hour and a half, and sometimes it was 2.5 hours.
Oh, no, that's kind of cool. I wish they would have done that when I was like 11, because, yeah, you'd only get the one episode, and it was seriously like 1 or 2 in the morning, because they'd also do Red Dwarf with it.
Oh, I love Red Dwarf. I missed kind of into that. I think they're all out there on... Well, I know they're all out there on YouTube.
No, they're not, because they've been doing new ones for a few years now.
Okay, Red Dwarf, I love it, but I wasn't Red Dwarf. I was thinking Blake 7.
Yeah, no. Red Dwarf was... What, it aired for 10, 12 years, but they only did like 8 seasons. And then they brought it back a few years ago, and they're up to like season 12 or 13 now. I know it's 12. They're up to season 12, and they are planning a season 13 coming up.
And in between, it's probably a good thing it didn't happen. They tried twice to reboot it, once with Terry Farrell as the cat.
Yeah, you can find the trailer on YouTube for the two different American versions that they tried. But what they're doing now is a continuation of the original series.
Actually, you can find the whole episodes.
Yeah, probably not the new stuff though.
No, not the new stuff, but I mean the two attempted reboots, at least good parts of them you can find.
Yeah, they were never aired, they were never licensed, so you can find those on YouTube. I didn't think the American versions were that good, but hey, there's something to watch.
Watched something the other night, where you can find them through IMDb, like Space Command or something, and the first one is out there on YouTube. It's trying to really trying real hard in the last couple of years to launch a web series, and the writing is just not very good. But Mirror for Land from Battlestar Galactic, not Battlestar Galactica, Babylon 5, Billy Mummy from Babylon 5, Robert Picardo from DS9, you know, various, you know, like a lot of these web crowdfunded series, you know, bunch of people used to have a show they're getting, but they're, you know, the FX, I guess, is okay, but the writing is just not there.
Daredevil this month.
Oh, yeah, everything's coming back, and I'm not caught up with the stuff that I watch, you know, off-season. I mean, I spend way too much time streaming stuff, and now I'm not even going to be able to keep up.
Yeah, I've kind of decided that I'm never going to get caught up, so I'll watch what I want when I want. Oh, and I do have to ask y'all's opinion on all of these various streaming services that are popping up, like the DC streaming that's coming up. I know Disney's planning their own streaming service, and just a bevy of others, and they're all pulling in all of their licensed material. And what do you think that's going to do long term to streaming?
Well, I wish they would consolidate. I am on, as you guys know, I am on DC mainly because of Young Justice and the live action
Titans.
Yeah, Teen Titans. And you know, and I've been going back and streaming because I Batman Beyond, all I ever got of that was the clips on YouTube. So that was the first thing I did, was went back and watched all of Batman Beyond, and I'd seen the movie.
How'd you like it?
Oh, I think that's my favorite DC animated series.
Yeah, I loved it.
And of course I had seen a lot of them on Netflix. Justice League Unlimited. I didn't realize there's over 10 years of Super Friends. Not that that's the first thing I would be going back to, because that's definitely a kid's show. But, I wouldn't mind watching one or two episodes here and there. And, of course, one thing I haven't even touched on is, you know, a lot of the print graphic novels or magazines or comic books or whatever are available on DC. You know, every time I watch, you know, because to get caught up, I always watch these YouTubers who explain, yeah, this is taken from this mag and this year and all that stuff, and you know, it's like I got enough stuff to do. I don't need to be doing that. But I'm thinking I am probably at some point going to get hooked going back reading all the old comic books.
Do they have all the new comics on there? Because then that would kind of make it worth it at $8 a month.
Yeah. It's the new stuff. It's not like the 50 stuff. It's the current stuff, as far as I can tell. I'm not the right person to ask, but, you know, I'd almost rather the older stuff. Like I said, I've complained. Used to be when, when I was a kid and I was buying comic books at the flea market, they would be, you know, 50 pages for 50 cents a piece or something like that. And then I'd sell them back the next month at half that, but still. You know, and then it got to all it was, you know, 15 pages, and you had to have, you know, follow the thing, you'd have to have the subscription, and that's when I quit reading comic books.
Yeah, well, it's the whole a la carte way that online streaming is becoming. Yeah, I do wish there was a centralized way to get it all, but between, you know, the
stuff that's coming out on YouTube, the stuff that's coming out as exclusive to Hulu, the stuff that comes out as exclusive to Netflix. I'm not going to pay for all of these services. I saw an article, I think it was yesterday, that all this a la carte streaming that everybody's trying to do is just going to push people back towards torrenting. And it's probably true.
Well, I imagine they're going to have trouble preventing people from torrenting. I don't know. The one thing that really annoyed me was CBS All Access, because, you know, and they were a little cheaper, $5 a month for one show that I'm actually going to watch. And really, what I probably should have is waited until the end, and, you know, we'll see when they get Picard and one, you know, and all that. Get a month of it, binge watch everything, you know, or record it or whatever, and then cancel. You know, the DC I don't mind because there is, there's the old content, there's most of the movies, animated movies I have seen through Netflix, but there's some of them I haven't. They're ones I paid for last year that are on there. If you haven't seen, I don't know if Justice League Dark is on there, the noir one, Batman by Gaslight is on there, which was good, not as good as I'd hoped it would be. It's one of those things, they showed all the good scenes in the trailer. Batman Samurai was okay. Not my favorite. But
it was horrible. It was crap.
I could see how someone would definitely say that. Definitely not, probably my least favorite of any of the DC animated stuff I've seen. And, you know, I'm going through the back catalog of all the, you know, DC movies that are there that I haven't, you know. Well, I've seen all the live action, but I mean all the animated. And a lot of the animated stuff is a lot better than any of the live action.
That I'll agree with. Well, Wonder Woman was good.
Well, one of the things I'm really looking forward to this fall, I think Aquaman looks incredible.
I have high hopes for Aquaman.
And, you know, the DC movie universe, if talked about, they flat out fired Ben Caviezel and, sort of a mutual thing. Ben Affleck doesn't want to do any more Batman movies. He's too damn old for it in the first place, I thought.
He was supposed to be playing an older Bruce Wayne. That was the role for the Batman versus Superman. That's in the comics, it was the older Batman, the getting ready to retire Batman that did that.
I've been wanting to mention what I would love to see. He would never have been right for the part as a younger man, but I would love to see Eastwood as Bruce Wayne in Batman Beyond.
No, I would love to see Keaton as Bruce Wayne in Batman Beyond.
He's not old enough yet, but that is what Keaton is definitely my second favorite Batman. He had just come off like Johnny Dangerously when they announced, and Beetlejuice. I was still in college when they announced, you know, he was going to be Batman, and I was like, are you freaking kidding me? You know, and then I just got blown away. Especially, I think Keaton was, you know, everybody likes the two newer series, and, you know, no, I and of course my favorite Batman, because I grew up with him. You know, you gotta love Adam West.
Yeah. Oh, and Constantine City of Demons is coming out October 9th.
Oh, is that animated or live action?
that is animated, but you can watch, I guess, all of it, except for there's 20 minutes of additional footage on CW streaming, because it started out as a web series of the same name, and they were just shorts.
Okay, so it's the same actor that did Constantine on TV.
Yeah, with 20 more minutes of footage.
Also Constantine on the upcoming season of
Legends of Tomorrow.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I still need to sit down and get through that original series. I think it's still both on...
Oh, it was good. The original Constantine series? I enjoyed it.
I think it's... I don't know if they've... I know it's on the DC channel. I don't know if they... I don't think they pulled it off CW Seed. I mean... Yeah. It will be. I mean... You know, they'll eventually pull all the, all the Disney stuff will eventually disappear off Netflix. I don't know. I don't mind paying for a streaming thing if it's more than one thing. I mean, yeah, it's piled up, but man, I want to see the Netflix Marvel series. And it used to be, that's all it was. It was Netflix, Marvel, and all the first-run movies they had were cheap horror stuff. You know, slasher flicks, which is not, you know, usually not my thing. But they have rounded it out, at least some with the original content, some getting more first-run series. You know, a lot of stuff shows up on Amazon. Some of it you got to pay for. I've got Redbox streaming if I have to. Probably a lot of times the Redbox, you know, it's a wash with gas driving to town to get it out of the actual box and come home with it. So, because none of my vehicles are very fuel efficient. I mean, let's face it, the most fuel-efficient vehicle I own is a hearse. But, yeah, I've probably got too many, but I don't know what I'd want to cut. I mean, there's stuff. Hulu is all the, you know, the, if nothing else, it's all the network stuff I watch. There is original stuff. I am watching HBO and Showtime and Skidamax through Hulu. That actually violates my rule, because there's really only one series. The Outsider or whatever that I watch on Cinemax.
Do you have to pay extra for the HBO and Cinemax?
Oh, yeah. And I'm actually going to look at, you know, is there a difference between Hulu and Amazon? Because I can get it either way.
Yeah, I have Prime right now. I don't know if I'm going to continue it next year, because I don't really watch a whole lot of their Prime Video. I mean, yeah, there's stuff there, but usually the quality doesn't look as good when I'm streaming it, and there isn't a whole lot there that I can't get somewhere else. And their original stuff, some of it's interesting.
Well, I guess The Man in the High Castle started up again. I like that.
American Gods Season 2 is supposed to be coming up. I'll definitely watch that.
Oh, I didn't know you could... do you have to pay extra for it?
I'm not sure. Because I was watching it with a friend when I watched Season 1, so I'll have to check.
Okay, I didn't know there was any way to get it without paying extra for it. Killjoys. I watched the first episode of that from Sci-Fi. And then
after my suggestion?
Probably so, but I found out you got to pay for the rest of it.
No, if you got Netflix, it's on there.
I've looked for Netflix or Killjoys on Netflix. I never found it.
Hold on, let me look, because it used to be on there.
Dark Matter was on Netflix, and it made me mad when they canceled that. You know, Netflix was that thing, you know, I guess when you type something into a search, it goes from what other, not what they have, but whether other people have searched for. So, if, you know, if Killjoys isn't there, you type in Killjoys and it comes up. So, oh, cool, Killjoys. Nope, it's not there.
No, you're right. I don't see it. I could have sworn it used to be on here.
Well, I've been looking for a way to get it since it started, you know, and other, well, it's not unreasonable per season on Amazon Prime, but I mean, I've been looking for it, and I can't imagine I would have missed it if it was ever on Netflix. And The Expanse eventually shows up on Amazon Prime for free. You know, a lot of stuff, if you're patient, eventually a year later will show up on Prime and or Netflix. I need to catch up on, it's not Mr. Roboto,
Mr. Robot?
Mr. Robot, yes. Keep waiting for the second season of Legion to show up on Hulu. Eventually it'll get there. But I mean, Marvel is on so many networks. If Disney ever, you know, seriously consolidates everything, they will gut every network out there. There's a lot of cool stuff on network, but if they ever pull the four original
Netflix.
Well, not Netflix, but the Fox? Avengers universe.
Oh.
The Defenders, you know, and all the parts of the Defenders. If they pull that, and they're saying they're not going to do any more Defenders now.
Yeah, it didn't show real well.
The Defenders?
That's weird.
No, Defenders did not show well. And they are hinting, though, that instead of Defenders, they might do Heroes for Hire.
Yeah, I've heard that. I mean, I was thinking they would definitely do another Defenders before they would do another season of Iron Fist. How did you guys like the second season of Iron Fist?
It was a lot slower, a lot more build, but they were trying to correct a lot of the mistakes that they had made with the first season. I don't have any complaints about the second season.
Like I've said, I mean, I'm easy to please, you know. You know, do me a superhero thing, I'll go watch it. You know, probably why I liked Venom, you know, where a lot of people are panning it.
And I really have to wonder what they're going to do with the third season, considering what they did in the second season.
Well, like Jessica Jones, you know, how do they put up with her adopted sister? Of course, there's probably an answer in the comics, because they're already ahead of it.
Yeah, the stuff they did in Iron Fist, though, doesn't really equate to the comics. I mean, it does in some ways, but what's-her-name never ended up with the power. The guns were in the comic books.
Oh, I didn't know that. All of a sudden, the double-wielding guns and she's Iron Fist 2 was never in the comics. Okay.
No, the guns were in the comics, and his power did get taken in the comics. But his girlfriend, what's her name, I can't remember right now, was never the one to receive the power.
No, that's what I meant. Actually, I think she's the best part of the series.
Does she have some sort of a power, though, in the comics? Not necessarily the power of the Iron Fist?
Not that I'm aware. Most of my information on that comes from reading the articles, because I was curious about the guns and what they did and how they worked.
So I want to say, I looked up her name and then saw pictures of her. Anytime I saw pictures of her, she looked like she was glowing and holding that sword. So I didn't know whether she had some sort of a superpower, but it wasn't necessarily that. So they needed some way to explain that, and so they decided to do that, where they transferred they made him lose his power, but they just wound up transferring his power from him to her, just to explain how she got superpowers.
Well, like I said, Colleen Wang is my favorite character in that series. As you know, it's weird when you do superheroes with guns, you know, because it's like. You know, the whole thing about superheroes, yeah, we can, you know, we can beat down the bad guys without killing them. But it's like, you know, I think every horror movie film, if it was set in Kansas, it would be boom, movie's over. My poor impression of somebody racking a shotgun. At least the ones where the bad guy is, you know, some mortal douchebag with a knife.
Oh, it's getting kind of late, guys.
Yes, it is.
Well, you said that like an hour and a half ago, and you were still talking.
This is true, but I normally don't have to work in the morning, and today I do.
We're not going to keep you. I know Honky has to get up early in the morning usually.
Yes, I do.
And shoot, Netminder's still on the channel. It's amazing if he's still awake.
Yeah, I'm still on the channel. I've been chasing Lenovo laptops.
You too?
Yeah, I'm looking at an L430.
Yeah, and I used to not know what Lenovo was, but I went to the customers and they said, yes, you know, we want to get out of this cheap laptop, and it's like it's a Lenovo. You do know that's IBM. And last but not least, Tony is hung with us.
Oh, just barely. I'm going to have to get going. So yeah, this has been great, guys.
Well, thanks. It's been great to have you.
Definitely.
We don't usually have anybody intelligent on the podcast.
Boo. It was great having you, Tony.
You know, thanks, I can.
Yeah.
Well, Joe, you can go back to Tilts this week and tell Dan we're not only stealing people from him, we're now stealing people from SMLR.
Works for me.
We don't steal, we borrow.
Good point. Okay. Find the outro, but this has been Legs Lugcast 111 with your firearms user group and your media discussion and actually some Linux, amazingly. So with me on the cast have been Honky Magoo.
Good night, folks.
And Joe.
See you in a couple weeks.
And Netminder.
Hello, friends.
And Tony.
It's been great on being on here and hanging out with you guys.
You need to drag Tom along with you sometime.
Yeah, he was going to be on the other interview, and then he had something going on. So, but, you know, this is something we're doing from home. So I'll let him know he needs to get on.
Certainly. And I am just talking while I'm trying to get myself back to the show notes page so I don't miss anything. There we are. Next recording date will be 19 October 2008. What that coincidentally, that's my birthday. So everybody wants to hack me, now you know. Our music is Downright, provided by Klaatu and Brome. Oh yeah. And I will have been back from Ohio Linux Fest, so that will probably be a center point of our discussion next time. We would like to thank Delwyn for the use of his Mumble server and for the bot module to find out the next recording date. If you need to find that out, just type .ns in the #LinuxLugcast IRC channel. We'd like to thank 000 Web Host for our web hosting. And, yeah, that was probably, that was my first external client on web hosting, you know, or first external server. I remember 000 Web Host fondly. Finally, we'd like to give special thanks to Kay Wisher, Father Finch, and Tony Bibas, who is in the channel, for all the help and the support over the years. Okay, this is...
Miner and Joe.
Hey.
Surprising that everybody's early today. Except for 50, of course.
Yeah, well, it's not 9:30 yet, so 50 may still show up early. 50 early is more like ladies early. Something short of infinitely late.
All right. So I have a problem. I think you two are probably the best ones to probably ask about this. I'm looking to get a new laptop, but I'm not exactly sure. Like, I really don't want to spend a lot of money, so I'm not. I don't really care about cosmetic.
Darn. I was going to say the X1 carbon.
So I really, but I like, I don't mind if it's like eBay where you get like something that's beat up and.
Right. I get what you're saying here. And if you're going to be looking on eBay, it's harder to find one in the ranges that you're probably looking for just because there's so many of them. But look at the Transformers. No, not the Transformers, the ThinkPads.
Okay.
Yeah, since that's somebody like, had a problem with a Transformer, I was going to wonder where you got that one. Yeah, ThinkPad. No,
that's like all ranges, all ages. Seriously. I mean, unless you're looking for a convertible, but I think they even make those now, the ThinkPad convertibles.
I'm definitely not looking for anything convertible. Basically, I have a lot of old dual-core machines that run well for the everyday BS, and you know, I've even used some for obviously audio editing, but some video editing and stuff like that, and it's been fine. But I've been playing around more recently with like games and stuff, so I'd like to think I'd like to try something that's not necessarily a gaming laptop. So I'm not looking for like high end, but something that's a little bit more, you know, up to date than most of the stuff that I'm running.
Right. Well, MSI has been making their gaming laptops now for a while. You could take a look at them. But for high-end, like business-level hardware, definitely the ThinkPad. But also, check out Facebook Marketplace. You might see some gaming laptops on there. That's where I got mine.
Oh, I have a mention on the audio editing side.
Was it that my truncate silence wasn't working?
No. There's an update to Audacity to 2.30 that has what they call punch and roll editing, which supposedly you don't have to. You can correct voiceover stuff a little easier. You don't have to chop everything into little pieces and then put it together.
That'd be interesting to look at. For the show, I'm always happy with my my script, though I've heard that I may have to switch out my or change my part of the script that does the truncate silence. It's kind of, some days it's hit or miss, and Kevin Wisher had brought that up to me and found a different Sox script that might work a little bit better, I think, which I'm going to throw into there and see if that works. So it, instead of working, you know, 50% of the time, maybe it'll work 100% of the time.
Oh, I'm not I'm looking at the more interactive, if you need to fix a header or, an intro or a outro type stuff.
Right, something with multiple audio.
Well, it's Audacity, but it's the latest Audacity seems to have a more robust for if you have to back up and restate something type of thing. I think that's what they call punch and roll. You punch out the old and roll in the new.
Yeah, I love using Audacity for audio editing.
Well, there's more to love and there's more saving options and other stuff. I don't know all the details. I don't do audio except by yakking right now. I barely do it with my mouth, never mind with a computer. So I just wanted to give you a heads up for those guys who actually work this stuff. By the way, I've had reasonable experience with HP ProBooks and stuff. Although sometimes the BIOS wants to take over in ways that are a little weird. Like when I boot up, it says the BIOS is shut down, some of the KVM features. I'm running an i5-2400 on this laptop right here. So, again, I don't know how much better that may be than your regular dual cores, but it's a quad core, or effectively a quad core.
Pretty sure quad core Core i5 is probably going to be a lot better than most of the things I'm running here.
Well, I don't know enough about them to know whether this is really a quad core or it's a hyper-threaded dual core. I know when I have my CPU monitor, I have four different streams, but I don't know if those streams go right down to the register set or not. What? Excuse me, do I need new glasses? There seems to be a 50 sighting in the, before 9 o'clock.
Hey, sometimes I'm on time.
Well, it's agreed that, you know, if you're here before 9:30, it's usually on time as far as the way we really start up. The Linux Lugcast, time zone is about half hour off of the others.
Yeah, looks like in the chat, it looks like Tony intends to join us after a while. Just real briefly, for you not minor the trouble I thought I had with that firearm last week, I didn't. It's not worn out. I'd never tried. It never occurred to me till this week before I took it into the be looked at by the gun repair guy that since it indexes through the hand, I'd never tried it, you know, pull the trigger and hold it down. And when you do that, then the cylinder's pretty much rock solid in the right place. So I took it by the repair guy. He says, yeah, it's, you know, that's probably how it came from the factory.
Well, if you found something that makes it lock up like you should, that's great.
Yeah, he suggested, I do know guys who fire 100-year-old firearms. I think he wasn't, you know, he said, you can shoot it, but I wouldn't go out and shoot it a whole lot, he said.
Well, I have a 2520 Stevens, which, because of the caliber, it's not Winchester 2520 Winchester centerfire, it is definitely a wall warrior, unless I need a very heavy-barreled club.
Yeah, but they're still fun to have around.
Oh, yeah, it's got Ballard or arcing block type action and single shot, you know. It's like the old Schutzen target guns, except it was designed basically as a rabbit shooter or whatever. Sort of slightly bigger version of a favorite.
So you can't even get that round in reloads?
Chasing it back, it's strictly black powder, and secondly, even the ammunition that you would fire it, that you would form it from, is probably not available. This is pre-Winchester center fire, or this was a Stevens-only proprietary cartridge. Very proprietary.
Okay, I was thinking, I knew you couldn't buy off the shelf like 44-40 rimfire, but I thought you could reload it, but that was probably a lot more common round.
Yeah, also, one of the things that I found on some of the old rimfires, like Spencer's and whatnot, by changing the breech block, you can get a centerfire one.
Yeah, that's handy. There are probably a lot of those conversions done back in the day as well.
Oh, yeah. Actually, what I found interesting is that there are not only reproductions of cap and ball revolvers that are cap and ball, but they're reproducing the conversion.
Yeah, Hickok 45 did, wasn't that long ago, I think, did a real good explanation of the conversions. They probably weren't really available till after the war, the Civil War, but assuming Colt still had, and Remington still had the parts laying around, you could probably get a cartridge gun a lot, you know, for half the price, plus the, get like the single action army, probably most of those actually did go to the government at first. So, you know, he was kind of explaining why would somebody buy a conversion? So a lot of those came from the factory as conversions, people are thinking. Nobody knows for sure. And, of course, there are a lot of people sit their guns back in. That's a strange thing. Colt couldn't make, at the time, you know, for years couldn't make a cartridge gun. But I think they were actually doing the conversions and sending them back out before they had the rights to actually build a new cartridge gun.
Well, I think also there were a number of conversions kits that were that you could go to your local gunsmith and he could order a conversion cylinder and the necessary pieces. Because they weren't making a gun, it wasn't violating the patent.
Right, but I think the Italian ones that come out now as a conversion, I think they're all using the factory kits. There may have been some, you know, kind of lost to the sands of history. There were probably some jobber kits and gunsmith kits done at the time, but you know, I've never seen anybody really document that. But yeah, I've considered. When I run, you know, there's only one more major model out there that I don't own that they make a reproduction of, and then it's down to the conversions.
Well, actually, I kind of followed this on YouTube, and one of the channels, I don't know whether it was British Muzzle Owners or some of the others, I really haven't been following that stuff as well as I used to. There were several different kinds of conversions, and even the reproductions of different kinds have followed the several conversion kits for Remington, for Colt, or whatever.
And, of course, I've got that model 1871 Colt, which is an open face, not a conversion.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying that I was not only surprised that they had the cap and balls coming out of Italy or wherever, but people were actually making factory conversions. Not converting the cap and ball, but you would buy the replica of a conversion.
Right, and you could actually buy the cap and ball and then buy the conversion kit, switch back and forth. Okay, Tony's here, so before we come too much like tilts, are we about ready to go this evening?
Yeah.
Hey guys, yeah, I hopped in, but I didn't see anything, so it's good to get on and talk to you guys. I haven't been around for a while, just been busy, so I'm glad I got a chance to.
Well, good to have you. You may know something more about some of these topics that I've put up for tonight than I do. All I know is what I've seen in the news in the last day.
I don't think I'm getting those emails anymore. Where is those links?
Okay, yeah, it's on Honky's server. Honky, do you have that set up where anybody can see it?
Yeah, I just got to send him a link.
Send me one too?
Okay, I just put it in the Mumble chat if you guys can see that. If not, we can copy it into the IRC.
I see it.
Yeah, email I think is still broken.
Well, I just haven't bothered really with the trying to do the mailing list again.
And Honky, I was gonna give you a reminder not to nag. But part of the stuff tonight, it's not so much for the show as feedback for a project me and a couple other people are talking about doing, and I was gonna direct feedback back to my personal email, but which is fine. But the roundabout point that I'm getting to, Far as I know, when the email's working again, I still don't have a 5150@linuxlugcast.com account.
I don't think we ever had that. We just had a redirect for any time we get feedback, it'll be sent to us. That was it. And
okay.
And right now, but the only feedback we got was I had gotten one from. You know what? I'll put that in, the feedback I got from Dave Morris. Dave Morris had sent feedback about the. I had talked. He was a couple episodes behind, but he had talked about. I had talked about the X2 tool for a while, for like an episode, and he had redirected me to. There was like three HPRs where they talked about the X2 tool.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I'd forgotten to check the. Newsletter feedback, or not newsletter, but feedback email. I think I got everything in for G+. I'm double checking. I think it was just me and Kay Wisher. I forgot to scroll down, see if there was anybody else. Nope, the one was from me before the previous show. So just two G+ articles, or posts rather. And since I guess Honky Post hosted last week, I'll offer to do it this evening.
Well, guys, I have the processor of that new mini PC up, and it looks like a fairly nice little box.
Are you looking at the that my mini PC link that 5150 put in?
Well, yeah, I've actually followed up beyond that to the M37Y30 new CPU that they're throwing into it.
Okay, I see that. Yeah, it does look really nice.
Well, it's a pseudo quad core. Interesting, they say it's not an embedded processor, but it's a mobile processor, so it may be socketed.
That's what it sounds like to me.
Dual channel, 16 gigabytes, so when you get it, it's going to be maxed out.
Yeah, it's Intel M to 7 Gen.
Yeah, that mini PC, or my mini PC, or however you say it, it specs up as a good device, but I think their delivery dates are unrealistic.
Yeah, I think even with their original setup, they may have been, biting off more than they could chew, but, and it's, well, the... Mycroft finally showed up fully a year after it was promised, the first version, because they got their prototype models back and essentially said, oh, we've got the ARM too close to the or the Raspberry Pi too close to the logic device. It's not a computer, And they're cross-talking to each other, so we had to go back to the drawing board. At least that's what they say. And like this, well, I'll save it for the show. But the guy that wrote the Lilliputian article that I linked, which actually links to the actual announcement that it's been delayed, said, "Yeah, if guys were trying to get a couple more months before somebody started, well, of course you can't actually come after them if nothing ever shows up. That's crowdsourcing." But, if somebody were going to pull a scam, that's exactly how they would do it, is say, oh, yeah, we couldn't, we had to make these changes, and it's going to be a couple more months, and bear with us. Okay, I'll say again, are we about ready to start, you think?
Sure.
All right, let me bring up the show notes page so I can read it right.
SMLR 2.0 is the revamped Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis, Mary Tomich, and Tom Lawrence.
On Even episodes, we cover distro fever and tech news. On the Odd episodes will be Fresh Looks, where we review a distro or software or tips and tricks. Live recordings are bi-weekly. Sunday morning on both Google Hangouts On Air and audio-only stream. Visit smlr.us for all the shows and the live recording schedule.
Oh my God, it's Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net/techshow. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Langridge, he's a bloody drunko.
If you don't like a gas, you can skid up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll get back.